Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. I am Cody, and continuing along with our month-long of romantic comedies that make me cry, we're going to go on to, as I told you last week, we're going to do Before We Go, which stars Chris Evans and Alice Eve, the other lead. There's only really, like, considerably, like, not that many people in this movie. Really, the cast is like maybe 8 people deep, and really there's only like a couple speaking parts. The rest are just sub parts that don't really need to, you know, be known by anybody. But this movie is special because it was Chris Evans' directorial debut, if that makes any sense. All of a sudden, that is in a different language. Why the hell? Chris Evans Page went to something in German. I don't know why. I think someone tagged the wrong Chris Evans at one point. Or, no, yeah, it's this is much better. I can read this. Yeah. Woo. Weird. Yeah, so it's his directorial debut. I think it's his only directorial anything, but this movie's a little different, but really it's not that. It's got a bunch of cliches in it, but the overall story itself is done differently. So the big thing this one is the guy and the girl don't get together at the end. By the way, I was going to go over, you know, Chris Evans is, he's Captain America, was the Human Torch. Alice Eve has been in a lot of things. I would say her most notable, she was in Star Trek Into Darkness. She was the blonde in that one, the one that Kirk had a thing for. She was, in She's Out of My League, which is one of my favorites. She played the female lead in that. She's been in a lot of stuff. I don't know too much. Most recently, she's got like a bunch of movies coming out this year. I guess really the most recent thing would be, she was in Criminal, but no one really saw that movie because it was kind of garbage. It's the one where Ryan Reynolds' brain was put into the body of Kevin Costner, I guess. I don't remember. That movie was dumb. But she's been in a bunch of things. Her most popular is Star Trek Into Darkness, and she's out of My League. A lot of other little things, but nothing. Nothing big past that. And then Before We Go, obviously she was in that. That's why I was talking about her. Anyways, so what makes this movie awesome is the relationship between Chris Evans' character and Alice Eve's character. So Nick is Chris Evans and Brooke is Alice Eve. But it starts off a very tumultuous relationship. He is seen playing his trumpet inside the Grand Central Station, making you think, you know, hey, like, he's probably down on his luck and needs the money. And she's running through, and she drops her phone. Him being a good Samaritan, picks it up, tries to follow her, tries to get to her, and she's like, he kind of, you know, dismisses him. You're a creep and I don't know you. You're a stranger, blah, blah, blah. And then he continues trying to help her because he sees that she's, you know, she missed her train and it's late at night. And then goes from there. So the awesome part about it is these two who are on a very different life trajectory from each other. Their lives are going in different ways. And the reason I'm saying this is his life has fallen apart and he's trying to put it back together. And her life is falling apart and she doesn't know if she wants to put it back together or let it fall apart. So when they come together, you learn in bits about him, his relationship, his relationships and her relationships, and how they don't, they're nothing alike. Other than the fact that neither of them are happy, because one's husband is cheating on her, the other one, he lost the love of his life and he's never been right since then. He gets a chance to meet up with the love of his life again at this mutual friend's wedding, but he finds out that she brought somebody, so he's reluctant to go. And then through the course of the movie, she talks him into going. Brooke, the character he meets, Alice Eve's character, talks him into going to the party to see her. And then when she forces his hand, it turns out that's bad because she's pregnant, and he obviously not with his child, because they haven't seen each other in 6 years or 6 or 7 years. And of course he's then heartbroken all over again. And he kind of blames her and she feels bad, but he knows it wasn't really her fault because he needed the kick in the ass to go in there. And so there's that. But so through the whole thing, you kind of see them pushing each other for different things, and it starts off a very uneven friendship, like, or not even friendship, just like she doesn't trust him. At one point she gives him a fake name. And then when he goes, her purse was stolen at a bar, so he goes to try to help her get it back. She has to cave and give her real name because, well, if he's going to get her purse back, he needs to know who she actually is. And so she has to tell him that, you know, she lied to him. And he's like, well, that's pretty un. And he ends up getting punched in the face because she ends up sending the cops in to this shady place he's trying to get the purse back from these, you know, guys who are stealing them and reselling them. So that's a pretty fun one. Throughout the whole thing, throughout the movie, you find out that he is this musician who's came to New York not just for the wedding, but for a tryout with a blues band or a jazz band. And he doesn't know if he wants to do it because he is afraid to put himself out there. He doesn't believe in himself. And people are obviously, you know, she's trying to, over the course of the movie, ends up trying to get him to go do it. And he eventually, you don't know if he's actually going to do it or not. Like, that's the weird thing with this movie ends when they separate after a very, they end up going and spending the night in a hotel room because his friend who's he's meeting for the wedding, he's supposed to be crashing in his hotel room. So he ends up giving him the key. They go there to clean up because they've been running around the city all night. There's a part where they start to kiss, but then they stop. And then they spend the rest of the night getting to know each other and little things like that. And so when you get to the end of the movie, you think, oh, they're going to, like, she's going to leave her husband because he's cheating on her. He's going to, you know, try out for the band and get it, and they're going to be happy together. But no, see, that's where this movie changes a little bit. They have this attraction to this underlining connection through their joined sorrow and the way their lives are going. And they end up because they're polar opposites, they actually, instead of having things in common, they kind of are like counterpoints to each other. Like, she's into fine art and he's into music. And so, like, they go back and forth, and you just get this feeling like, oh, you know, that's what's going to happen. But you don't know. The movie ends with it, and watch, a lot of people complain about the fact that you don't get this happy ending. But in a way you do, because, like, he convinces her to go back and see if the relationship with her husband is worth saving, even though he has been cheating on her. And then you think he's going to go do it. He kind of says he's going to, but you don't know if he is or not. And then there's this note that he leaves in her coat on the back of this hotel survey card that they were doing jokingly together, and she reads it. You don't get to know what it says, but it puts a smile on her face. So you don't know if it's like one of those inside joke things that they kind of built up during the movie, or if it's, you know, like his contact information or what it is. You don't really know what it is, but she's on her way back on the train back to Boston to, you know, whatever with her husband, and he's going off to do whatever. And so you don't really know like where they stand each other, but they're like, there's this moment at the end where like there's this bit they do earlier in the movie where they go by this payphone, which obviously in this day and age payphone, and they fake it like it's a time, like pretend like it's a time machine to go back, and it's a way of them telling each other something special without saying it, you know, directly to them in a weird way, kind of, you know, it's this like safety blanket thing. And they do it again at the end of the movie where like he calls himself and tells him, you know, to do all the same things, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, be happy about it. It's you, when you watch the movie, you understand more. And then she gets on and there's like tears in her eyes and there's tears in my eyes, there's tears in his eyes. And then they embrace. And then she goes on her way. He goes on his way. So, you know, very sad. The movie itself doesn't do a whole, like, there's not a whole lot going on in it. So the entire time, once they find out she can't use the ticket, the train station doesn't open until another, like, you know, 5-6 hours later. But that probably means she's going to be late to getting home because she left a note blasting her husband for the infidelity, and she feels bad about it. So she wants to try to get home before he does so she can destroy the note, but she can't get back in time because she was in, because the missed train. And so he's trying to help her get back and she won't tell him this right away. Just she tells him he's just trying to be a nice guy and help her get back there. So they're trying to find a car that'll take her. Taxi's too expensive. So they're going to get a private car, but they don't have any money. His credit cards are being, declined because apparently he used them up because obviously he doesn't have a job. And she has no money because her purse was stolen. Her phone's broken. So asked people to borrow their phones. She ends up trying to call her neighbor to go and destroy the notes. But it doesn't work because the house is locked and she can't find the key. And she was going to break in, but when she did so, the alarm went off. She got scared, blah, blah, blah. And then so it starts off, he's just trying to help her out, and it kind of escalates from there, like, you know, rolling snowball downhill. More and more stuff goes crazy. They try to find her purse. They go to a sweatshop where it was to get a deal for it. He tries to convince him that he already paid for it by this other guy that sent him there. And they're like, oh, I'm going to call him. And then the police show up, and that's when he gets punched in the nose. And she's like, oh, I'm really sorry. He's like, blah, blah, blah. Adds to it. There's a part where they're going to go meet his friend. They think at this party ends up being a different party. And then they get mistaken for the band who's running late for this party. So he's like, yeah, our car broke down. Sorry about our traffic and stuff, but we're here. I'm the trumpet player. And she's, the singer, and he forces her to sing this one song, which is My Funny Valentine, who she once serenaded at summer camp to this guy that she liked. And so he forces her to do it. And then so they do this, you know, really bare bones rendition of My Funny Valentine. And then the real band ends up showing up at the end of the song. And so they have to run away. And so it's pretty funny. And then you learn about this thing called hotel art, a hotel graffiti, where, because she travels for work all the time, she knows about this thing where, and it's a well-known thing actually, where on the art inside hotel rooms is piss poor. We all know that. I mean, in a hotel, the art is fucking terrible. But there's this thing where if you look at the back, people started drawing pictures on the back of the art and hanging it back up so no one can see it. And so if you're looking for it, you can see what it is. And then they look at it, and she explains to them that it was started by a comedian. It's kind of went on from there. And then so they go and leave there, going to find the real party. She has to convince him to go in. He ends up seeing his ex, finds out she, you know, like they're going to go get drinks or lunch the next day. Then she goes back in and says, hey, go, you know, talk to her again. That's when he finds out she's pregnant. And then, you know, goes bad from there. He gets a little bit sulky. And then what else happens in there? They go up to the shared hotel room. They both take a shower separately, of course. He's a gentleman. That's when they kiss very passionately. They decide not to go any further, even though they both want to, obviously. They're very both very attractive people and attracted to each other. And they're very vulnerable states each other. And so they spend a couple hours in the hotel room until dawn when they can go get on a get her on her train. But throughout that, they do art on the back of the paintings, and they never show you what either of them did, and they never show each other, which is another little fun thing. And it's like, just, you know, what happens. Then they go to the train station where he, you know, does the whole payphone time machine joke again from earlier in the movie that I was telling you about, where basically, he essentially is saying that he was passed out. He's going to meet this woman, that he should stay with for the night. They share one last kiss as she finally departs on her way home. She finds the guest service paper that she and Nick filled out that he snuck into her coat, and on it says turn over. And after doing so, she smiles, and what she reads, though the message never is left ambiguous. So whatever it is, she smiles. So that's the end of that portion of it. So, just like all the movies that I picked this week, this one deals a lot with music as well. One particular song is My Funny Valentine, because it's a reference they bring up earlier, and then she has to perform it at the wedding. But then he's a musician who plays, you know, just jazz music and everything. And he's going to try out for this band, and there's this kinship over music that goes throughout the movie itself. My Funny Valentine plays a couple times throughout the movie, as well as other musical performances. But it's, you know, obviously a link, a big thing with him because he's a musician, and they kind of bond over that a little bit because of the him trying out for the band, which is, you don't always find, you know, you don't always meet somebody who's trying out for a blues band that's, you know, or a jazz band that's famous within the jazz band world. And, you know, he's actually pretty good at it, but he's not lacking confidence, but he's kind of down on himself. So he doesn't know what he's going to really do, if he's going to even try out, like put himself out there. And then he tells their story about how he played with the bass player from this band who liked his shit, as they say. And then she brings up later on when they're in front of his ex, Hannah, which is sort of awkward. And she's really excited for him because they haven't seen each other in years. And obviously, you know, she's doing well. He's doing well. She's pregnant, which is obviously not well for him. And that sort of thing. So that's the musical component of it. That is a weird link. I didn't realize until I started watching these movies all together. I was like, oh, there's a really big music component in all four of these movies. And even the next week's movie, which if you want to watch it again before you listen to the next week's podcast, or next week's episode of the podcast, is Serendipity with John Cusack and I'm spacing on her name right now. Not Kate Winslet. Is it Kate Winslet? No, not Kate Winslet. That's the chick from Titanic. The one from Underworld. Why am I spacing on her name right now? Anyway, Serendipity. My brain's not functioning on that level right now to tell you what that movie, or who is that? Kate Beckinsale. That's the one. Ha ha. Ha ha. Then that's another one of those. It's more, that one is by far the most cliche heavy, but it's done in an interesting way. So 500 Days of Summer has a very weird narrative story and does not have a traditional cliche type Well, actually, there's not a whole lot of cliches. Anyways, it's a dumpster fire for the most part of this terrible relationship that ends up leading to a guy meets girl. We don't know how that ends up going because it's left off. They're just going to get drinks after the interviews. But if you listen to that episode, you'll understand what I mean. Then there's About Time, which is way more of a traditional story of boy meets girl, but thrown with time travel and a very interesting way of telling the story with the time travel that is different, but it is very traditional boy meets girl. They fall in love, live happily ever after together. This one is super steeped in, has a lot of cliche-ish stuff in it, but not the normal way you'd use them. So it's like it's got the meet cute thing, but it's like this drawn out meet cute thing instead of just being like, there's that moment and then there's like this mistrust and then there's like betrayal. It's very all over the place, but again, you know, there. And then next week's movie, I'll talk about that too, because it has a lot of cliches in it, running through airports and these near misses and all these things, but it's done in an interesting way. But also has another interesting, well, again, I'll talk about it next week. But in this one, what makes it so awesome is you get to see these two characters in the most vulnerable states, but they come together in a weird way, but then they don't end up together at the end of the movie, so you don't know if they actually end up together because you don't know what happens after the fact. But it's an interesting way of doing it, and it's not very cliche turn of events, because, you know, most of these movies, boy meets girl, boy loses the girl somehow, be it, you know, relationship together, whatever happens to be, and then they get back together because of a, you know, shared experience or whatever happens to be, but not in this movie, not this one at all. Like I said, both of them are very, very bad places in their lives and their experiences. And there's these key moments throughout the movie where they come together and you're thinking, oh, okay, this is how it's going to be. But then it's not, because then something happens to kind of divide them again, because they are in this dark place in their lives, and again, they're I don't want to say vulnerable, but they're down. They are vulnerable. And then they clash and they come back together. Oh, it's an interesting way of doing it. But I really like this one because I really enjoyed the performances of both Chris Evans and Alice Eve, and she's not bad to look at, so that helps too. Neither is he, really, if you're into that sort of thing. I wouldn't say I am. He's pretty hot. But yeah, so that's it for Before We Go. Join me next week when we'll wrap up the month of love with romantic comedies that make me cry, with Serendipity, with Kate Beckinsale and John Cusack, as well as a bunch of other people we'll talk about next week too that you know the names of, or you know who they are. You may not know their names, but we'll get to that next week. And as usual, as I leave you, let's be awesome together, guys. That's it for this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. Talk to you guys next week.